Brett Thomas here, and I'm really excited because I am here on the phone with Dr. Mark Goffney. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Brett. It's delightful to be with you.
I am so looking forward to this conversation. Many of our listeners, if not most, are already familiar with your work. But for those of you who are less familiar, Dr. Mark Goffney of Oxford University is the author of numerous books, including his most recent, Unique Self, The Future of Enlightenment, which is being released within the next year. And he is the founder, along with Ken Wilber, Sally Kempton, and Mariana Kaplan, of the Center for World Spirituality. So, Mark, what are you up to these days? What's going on?
Well, the major thing I'm up to is I'm occasionally having enough time to talk to my children, which is the best thing in the world, and I've got to make more and more time for that. So that's the real thing I'm up to. I've got two kids in Israel, Eitan and Yair, who are my two boys, and I have a little baby, which I had together with Mariana Kaplan. We had this beautiful baby together named Zion, and so that's kind of a big deal in the world. And trying to kind of figure out what to do when I grow up. So that's what I'm spending my real time on, Brett. But since I got to do something besides that, I'm kind of just passionately, wildly excited about this invitation that has presented itself to really participate in the evolution of consciousness. You know, through responding to Spirit's invitation, which is so just crying out to us, so obviously, so beautifully, so plaintively, to actually formulate a new framework for Spirit. You know, for the first time in the history of the human being, right, there are five new factors that never existed before, literally in history. First, for the first time in history, we have not local problems, we have global problems. It used to be that what was happening in Nepal wouldn't have much to do with what's happening in Carmel, California, right? They're just different worlds. You have local problems. France doesn't affect Argentina. Argentina doesn't affect Bosnia, you know, et cetera. Today, there's no such thing as a local problem. Everything is global. We've gone global. Wow. That's a new set of evolutionary conditions. And when you have new evolutionary conditions, you need a new evolutionary response on all levels, including, of course, the level of Spirit, of spirituality. So a world with global problems needs a global spirituality. If problems are world problems, we need a world spirituality. Spirit needs to respond to the new evolutionary conditions with a momentous leap of its own, right, offering a new framework, offering a new vision. And so what we're trying to do with enormous, you know, audacity and enormous just trepidation and humility, right, is to try and formulate what would it mean, you know, deploying effectively integral principles, right, to actually create a vision of world spirituality, which is not a new world religion, right, but it's a framework, right? So that's really what we're up to in a deep way, Brett. And, you know, we're just kind of noting these new conditions. You know, one is global problems, global, you know, global reality. Two is, for the first time in the history of planet Earth, the best insights of all the great traditions are available to us. They've been gathered from different places in the world, and they're actually available. You can actually study them, right? You know, three, for the first time in the history of planet Earth, right, there's a critical mass of people who are at world-centric consciousness, who have moved beyond ethnocentric to world-centric consciousness. That was never true before. There have been about 15 attempts, Brett, in the history of planet Earth that we know of to formulate a world spirituality, and they all foundered. You know, they all failed essentially to take root because there weren't enough people at the center of gravity of world-centric consciousness, which is a prerequisite for world spirituality. For the first time in history today, that's not true. For the first time in history, there are hundreds of millions of cultural creatives around the world whose essential altitude, their location, is world-centered consciousness, and they're completely interested, even yearning for, right, even desperately yearning for, an articulation of Spirit, which is world-centric, at least, you know, which would be a world spirituality. That's three, and that's a very, very big deal.
Wow.
That's four, you know, and four, I'll just give you, is it okay if I just go do two more?
Sure.
Just so people have the whole picture, right? You know, the fourth dimension is what we're calling dual citizenship, right? And dual citizenship, the way I'm using the term, together with my friend Ken Wilber, right, dual citizenship means that for the first time in history, you can locate yourself in a tradition, but you actually realize that that tradition, be it Buddhism or Judaism or Islam or Taoism, right, doesn't exhaust your identity. You know, I'm Christian and I'm a member of a world spirituality. I'm a global citizen of spirit. So I'm able to be a dual citizen for the first time today. We recognize that idea. 100 years ago, if you had 2 passports, Brett, the FBI was looking into you. You were a suspicious character, right? Today, if you have 2 passports, that's kind of interesting. It's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
So we've moved to this new reality in which being a dual citizen is a live option, right? So a world spirituality speaks to both the hundreds of millions of people who are natural dual citizens. They both participate in their tradition, and they're part of the larger vision of spirit, the global vision. And right, a world spirituality speaks to the hundreds of millions of people who are not dual citizens, who just don't find themselves in the traditions at all, but are looking for a framework of meaning which addresses ultimate issues that they can locate themselves in, which is non-fundamentalist, you know, which is beyond a kind of, you know, blue meme or amber meme, we say in Integral, amber meme kind of, you know, mythic membership level. It's beyond the kind of rational, you know, business capitalistic level. It's beyond even a pluralistic level, but it's actually a genuine, you know, second-tier consciousness spirituality, which is genuinely global, right, and which really addresses the essence of who they are. So that's the kind of fourth reason. The fourth characteristic is dual citizenship. You know, the fifth characteristic of our age, which invites and even demands a world spirituality, would be that the story has changed. That's for the first time we have a universe story, right? And that's for the first time we have a new cosmology. We actually can trace the 13.7 billion years of unfolding, right, of our cosmos, right? And we still actually have the direct light coming from the initial Big Bang, which comes to us, and which, you know, in the form of shooting stars. But we can actually tell the universe story. You know, we're born of stars, right? You know, the initial initiating energy of the cosmos lives in us. It was us who initiated the cosmos. We have a realization of that in such a profound way, which simply wasn't available 50 years ago. So there's a new universe story, which is the matrix of this emergent world spirituality. So all of those factors are, Brett, and I think maybe this is the first time I've said them together, you know, out loud in a conversation, so I want to completely thank you for that. Those are all new. Those are all completely new. Those were not true at any other time in history. This is a new set of evolutionary conditions. It's wild, and it demands a response. And the response is spirit itself responding, spirit responding to spirit. And part of that response is the emergence of a world spirituality based on integral principles. And that's unbelievably exciting.
Wow, it's such a global, kind of hugely big picture perspective that you paint.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with it sounds like very, very good news when you have, as you said, hundreds of millions of people that have world-centric consciousness. And they're not merely ethnocentric and my belief system versus your belief system. There's room to have a dual citizenship, and it sounds very positive. And I just was curious how you would contrast that glasses half full picture with a more pessimistic picture too, glasses half empty, when we turn on the news. And it's a bit scary at times, and it's you and I were talking previously about this idea that something is happening in the world. There's almost a sense of a quickening in some way. It's almost an intangible feeling, and it does seem to be two pronged almost, that things are getting worse and they're getting better in certain ways. But I think you would probably have a really interesting perspective on that. So what would you say about that, Mark?
And no, I appreciate that's a great, great inquiry. I mean, that's the on the money question, Brett. And I try and say it like this. You know, we have a triune brain, right? You know, a triune brain. Let's kind of look at it from a simple neurological neuroscience perspective. So our triune brain, our three part brain, has, of course, you know, three parts. That's what three part brains are supposed to have, right? So one part is, you know, the highest part we call the neocortex, as you know. You know, which is, you know, this deep thinking brain, which is, you know, the source of, if you look at Ray Kurzweil's movie, Transcendent Man, you know, the futurist Ray Kurzweil, and just, you know, how rapidly, you know, our minds are expanding and our minds are developing and our grasp and, and the incredible unfurling, you know, explosion of technology, which is going to completely change our lives in the next 10 years, right? So there's that. That's the neocortex at work. You know, but then there's the emotional brain. Mm-hmm. The emotional brain, you know, the amygdala, you know, the feeling brain, right, is, of course, you know, less well-developed. You know, we're in certain ways we're kind of developing, you know, and we're kind of evolving from a feeling perspective. But in other ways, we're not exactly, right? In other ways, you know, it's not quite happening.
Yeah, well, if you look around, I mean, even as we speak, there's at the date of this recording in history, there's huge riots in London. And the headlines are like London burning and people having arguably an amygdala moment. An amygdala reaction moment of kind of unbridled emotion without in that state, without the benefit of a lot of perhaps a lot of activity from the neocortex, rational thinking, right? So we look. So I think that's where you're going is that all you need to do is look around and you see the evidence of this triune brain, right?
Right, right. No, I think that's completely right. And if you kind of stay with it, you realize that. The third part of the brain is the reptilian brain, right? So, you know, it's not clear to me what's happening in London. Is it reptilian or is it amygdala, right? But
right.
You know, the reptilian brain is primal, you know, survival, you know, cutthroat, you know, et cetera. So really what's happening is one dimension of the brain is evolving, you know, very dramatically. You know, the second dimension, the amygdala, is somewhat evolving but also somewhat regressing, and the reptilian brain's always there. So
right. As
much as there's a possibility in every step for enormous evolutionary progress and unfolding, you know, in every moment there's also a reptilian brain at play, and every technological innovation can be hijacked by the reptilian brain or used in the service of the great heart. So We just need to always find, you know, before we get lost in a kind of evolutionary optimism, we need to realize that evolutionary optimism is the great possibility, right? But that great possibility is not a given, and we have to do an enormous amount of hard work ourselves, you know, within ourselves, right, within our relationships, within our communities, within our larger, you know, contexts, right, to actually assure, right, that the great invitation and promise, right, of the evolution of consciousness takes place, and that that great invitation and promise isn't hijacked by the reptilian brain.
Right.
That's a big deal.
So it's interesting how you can take the current events, if you will, and looking out, kind of what's happening out there in our world, and see the corollary inside our own selves, each individual human of the billions of human beings that are taking part of this unfolding the innovation and change and evolution that you described before. Is that why you're so fascinated with spiritual development and spirituality, because of this connection between what happens inside here with the individuals is manifest outside in our collective?
Yeah, no, I think that's completely right. I mean, I think basically that what we need to do, that's exactly right, Brett, what we need to do today desperately is we need to evolve the consciousness necessary, right, to hold our new reality. Right? And as if we have this enormous technological, right, explosion, you know, on so many levels, right, you know, through the vehicle of the neocortex, but we haven't engaged in a parallel process, right, of emotional, spiritual widening, deepening, and developing, right, then we're sunk. Right? And when I say emotional widening, deepening, developing, I'm not talking about the kind of new age, you know, kind of touchy-feely, you know, woo-woo, you know, green-level consciousness, you know, gunk. Use the word G-U-N-K, right? Uh-huh. Use that word precisely, which is, you know, is what it is, but we need much, much more than that. You know, tragically, kind of green-level consciousness, which is where most of spirituality is today, you know, bypasses both orange, right, and amber, blue, right? So it doesn't have the ethical purification. And if, you know, checking itself and checking its motives and doing the shadow work that, you know, amber slash blue would have, it doesn't have due process, checking the facts, you know, fairness, you know, proportional response. You know, you're hurt, you go to try and destroy someone's work of 15 years, right, because you were hurt. You know, or somebody didn't, you know, didn't honor you in the right way. You skip due process, you skip fairness, you skip, you know, kind of justice, right? So we don't need that kind of spirituality. That's not going to actually solve all problems. We actually need a genuine integral spirituality or a world spirituality based on integral principles in which we actually deploy the best values of blue, meaning of amber, blue, amber in integral terms, blue in Don Beck's terms, right, where we actually have a genuine system of checks and balances and ethics and law and structure, right, the best of that, right, and then we take the best of fairness and due process and fact-checking, et cetera, and then we bring it to kind of this multicultural understanding pluralistic place, right, which is the green level of consciousness, and then we kind of up-level the entire thing and create a much higher translogic intelligence. That's actually what we need. We need, you know, at the sector of consciousness, right, what we need to actually develop is a new form of intelligence, which is translogical, right, which allows us to access the feminine and the masculine in a kind of seamless way and move between them, which allows us to kind of deploy any level of the spiral of consciousness that's important at that particular time, which allows us to kind of flex, flow, heart, mind, body logic. Right, that's what we need today. And we need to actually develop literally the possible human, right? We need a kind of vision of the possible human, and we need to begin to manifest that vision, you know, as ourselves in our own lives.
I can't help but think about not only in our own lives as we push forward beyond our boundaries, we're kind of going into new territory individually in our own practices as we expand our mind and our heart, as you said, and our spirit, and deepen. And then I'm reminded of the great teachers and the great leaders of cultural movements and so on. But if we look at our wisdom traditions, in fact, if we just take an evolutionary view of how the human race has gone through these various stages of development, there's a certain leadership. There's leading minds. There's leading spirits. There's folks that are going first, that are kind of, you know, taking that leap or paving the way. So how does leadership tie in to all this, and how does leadership come into play in the emerging kind of world spirituality and in the merging what's happening in humanity? There's all these things are happening, and it's a little bit scary, but it's also kind of exciting, and where are the leaders, and how do we lead, and what is your perspective on leadership in that regard?
Yeah, that's a great question. So let's just think for a second. You know, what do we need in leaders? You know, so first, you know, we need not to kill our leaders. That's the first thing. You know, that's a big deal. You know, we need not to kill them. You know, there's a great book by Reich, as in Reich from Freud's circle, called Murder of Christ. Right? And there's a tendency, when I say Christ, I don't mean, of course, in a Christian sense, right? You know, blessing and love, of course, to Christ, you know, in the Christian sense. But Christ in the sense of leadership. That's what Reich is talking about. You know, we have a tendency first to kill our leaders because we have a tendency to murder life force. And we give all sorts of explanations of why we do it. You know, he lied to me. You know, he hurt me. She hurt me. She didn't hold me. Right? You know, and all of these things may be true. Right? But the core of it is not that. The core of it is like, okay, work with it. We don't kill our leaders. Right? You know, the biblical vision of leadership is about imperfect leaders. They're all imperfect. We're all broken hallelujahs. We're all imperfect vessels for the light. Right? And we need to, I think the first thing we need to say about leadership, and I know this is a kind of unusual thing to say, you know, in response to your question, is the first thing we need to do, though, is not kill our leaders.
Right.
The big deal. Right? You know,
allow space for leadership and allow space for leaders who are imperfect and who may not have all the answers, but yet they're out there pushing the envelope. So just
that's exactly right. Allow space for us for leadership to both provide a vision, right, but not to look to destroy leadership, to really to let it emerge, to take care of our leaders, to hold our leaders, and to understand and acknowledge that we're all imperfect, you know, vessels for the light. So that's kind of one. And that's a big deal by itself, because what's happened in American politics, for example,
right,
and the American judiciary, something similar is actually happening in Israel at the same time, is that, you know, anyone who's serious, you know, serious, large, great people, don't actually look for leadership positions because they don't want to get crucified.
Right.
So we're actually losing some of our best leaders. So that's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, an entirely, different ilk. What we need in leadership is two things. We need vision and we need implementation. Right? So we need first, we need leaders with imagination, right, to reimagine what our world might look like. Because the crisis in our world today, at its core, isn't really a crisis of resources, it's a crisis of imagination, right? How do we reimagine, right, what's possible? How do we reinvoke, right, the enchanted possibility of possibility? And so the first thing that a leader needs to do is to evoke imagination.
Wow.
Right, to evoke wonder. Right, to evoke radical amazement at what could be. That's the first job of a leader. The leader is not so much a homo sapien, but a homo imaginus.
Huh.
Right, and to really invoke that power of imagining, right, is really to shatter the image, right, the frozen image, right, the idolatrous image, right, of what could be. And really to invoke, right, the possible human, right, the possible human society. So I think that's the first requirement of a leader, right, is to address directly the crisis of imagination by providing, by articulating, by embodying in a new vision of what's possible. So that's one. Two, which is the other side of it, is a leader's got to be very close to implementation.
Yeah.
Right? A leader's got to be very close to, practically, what should we be doing? How should we do it? How should it happen?
Right. Right.
That's a big deal. Like, how do we do this? Even if it's just to take baby steps, let's take some baby steps. And that's a very, very big deal, And that's really, 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 really important. That leader has to actually provide some practical way to make this real and to make this alive that actually becomes, something real, and concrete and embodied in the world.
Well, that so resonates with my own experience, and as you know, over many years working with leaders, is where are we going? Vision, imagination. Where are we going? Does the leader have a better idea of a better place? Of what's possible, and then a leader can have lots of great ideas and a great vision, and talk a big game. But what happens if that leader fails to make progress toward that vision? If that leader doesn't implement, ultimately the leader will lose credibility and will have less followers, right? Because people want to follow someone who knows where they're going and who can actually take them somewhere. And,
right.
When I think of the world that you work in the worlds of spirituality, and I think of this term spiritual leader, and a whole other conversation would be integral spiritual leader, but let's just back up for a minute. A spiritual leader. Gosh, I'm just really interested when I use that term, spiritual leader, what is evoked? I mean, especially in our mainstream culture around the globe, spiritual leaders and, like, the images that pop up in my mind and, outside of certainly the inner, our kind of, inner friends that are spiritual teachers within the integral community. But if you just think about in our mainstream world, spiritual leaders, it's interesting what comes up because it seems like the folks that get the most press are mostly the ethnocentric spiritual leaders who are, very vociferous. So what is your opinion about, so we talked about leadership in general, but now apply that to spiritual leadership, and isn't that in a large part what we need is some spiritual leadership, but yet where is that emerging from?
Yeah, no, we totally need spiritual leadership. And again, we need to let it emerge, and it's going to emerge, from the community that lets it emerge. Right? And here I go back to this theme, and perhaps a surprising theme, but one of the things that the integral community potentially can do is really to let new leadership emerge. A leader only emerges from the community. And yes, we need leadership that's world-centric. We need leadership that's rooted. We need world spirituality leaders. We need leaders who are kind of holding this meta picture, who can show us, right, it's the job of a spiritual leader to show what are the patterns that connect, what's the large story, right, in a world, in a postmodern world in which the only grand narrative was that there are no grand narratives, we need to be able to reclaim the story, right? We need to move past the destroying of the universe. So the leader is the one who's not merely from a great tradition, which is beautiful and wonderful, right? The great traditions by themselves are all pre-modern, right? What a leader needs to be is, right, an embodiment of the best of pre-modern, modern, and post-modern, right? The best of the great pre-modern traditions, the best of modernity's, you know, scientific demand for evidence, its psychology, right? Post-modernity's understanding of the role of context, right, and the role of, you know, deconstruction, right? So a great leader has to be today, has to be emerging from spirit, but from spirit's best expressions, pre-modern, modern, and post-modern. That's spirit's next move, right? That is a vision of a world spirituality, right? Spirit that moves through a leader, which is pre-modern, modern, and post-modern, which is alive, which is passionate, which is sensual in the most appropriate, you know, way of being, which isn't afraid of the connections of Eros, which isn't, you know, apologizing all the time, which is alive, a love, and a flame. Right? That's what we need. And if we allow that to emerge, it's what will emerge.
So as you're talking, I'm you know, imagining this, it's a very noble, valorizing picture that you paint of this world-centric consciousness leader. And one of the things that occurs to me is some listeners, and it's easy for me to do this too, to think, yes, I would totally follow a leader like that. And it's this idealized sense. And it sounds so noble and so great that it almost sounds perhaps not me. That, well, when one of those leaders emerges, that's going to be awesome. And my question is there some version of that that can emerge from an ordinary man and woman?
Absolutely. It's emerging right now. Here we are talking, right? In other words, of course it is, right? In other words, it's available and present right now, which is why I keep coming back to, will we allow it to emerge? Will we recognize it? Will we move with it? Will we be responsive to it, right? Will we avoid our need to crucify it? And that's really the question. It's right here, right now. It's available. And in our collective leadership, right, many of us are living and walking, you know, that talk with delight. You know, we're past the age of there being one person. There's not one. You know, there's a collective leadership. You know, there's more than one star, right, in the sky. But we have, thank God, many bright stars, right? And, you know, and we need to actually, you know, recognize, follow, be bright stars ourselves. Because even the nature of following today is different than it ever was. Right? I follow, I submit, and yet I also self-author.
Yeah.
You know, I self-author. I don't give up my authority, even as I recognize, you know, and move to support, you know, larger visions of leadership. So we're in a new era where the leadership is here. It's present. It's available. It's not only emergent, but it's already emerging. You know, and the question is, again, right, it's up to us, both as leaders and as part of the community, right, to let that leadership emerge, right, and to give it the love, the nurturing, the support, the forgiveness, the understanding, and the demands that will allow it to be all that we need it to be.
I'm reminded of this idea of letting it emerge, not only leaders out there emerge, but letting this leadership emerge within ourselves. And, you know, in my work, of course, I work with leaders every day. And one of the things that I've noticed is leaders often hear a call. They intuit a call. There's this feeling inside that, I can give something to the world. I have a gift to give. There's something to be done, and something tells me perhaps I'm the one to do it. And this sense is often kind of the impetus of a person being willing to take a little bit of risk or put herself or himself out there and perhaps take the first step. And I know that at the conference you're going to also be talking about this incredible work that you've been doing that I've had the opportunity to be exposed to, gosh, like 5 years ago, I think, at the Integral Institute when you first started kind of bringing it out to the public, which is this idea of unique self, which is akin to, in my work, what I think of as life purpose. And you have this whole interesting twist on it as it relates to spirituality and enlightenment. So can you tie in the leader, you know, ordinary men and women who might be hearing this recording, and, you know, 82 countries have listened to these recordings over the past 2 weeks, so folks from 82 countries, which is phenomenal. So someone could be in a faraway country, you know, hearing this recording perhaps asking the question, am I a leader? Am I a future leader? Is there an aspect of me that can step into the role of leadership? And hearing that call, what would you say to that person about and tying in your idea of we all have a unique self, we all have some gift to give to the world if we listen? And how would you kind of articulate that?
You know, thank you, Brett. That's a great inquiry. I mean, in a word, every human being, right, when they awaken as unique self. Right? When I awaken not only as part of the one, what I call true self, right, but I realize that my true self sees with a unique set of eyes, unique self, right, that I'm actually a unique and unrepeatable expression, right, of divinity. I'm a unique emanation of all that is. And out of that, welling up from that matrix of unique emanation, I have a unique gift. There's something that I can do, give, live, be, right, pray. There's a way that I can express and incarnate in the world that's mine and mine alone, and I've got a gift to give that all that is that never could be given, never will be given, and never is given other than by me. That's unbelievable. That's leadership. That's precisely leadership. Right? My leadership is in the giving of my unique gift, my utterly and radically unique gift. And at the same time, right, every leader is also part of a community, is also a follower, can also locate themselves in a larger context, can also submit to the larger context, give for the larger context, live for the larger context. So both of those are true. And on the one hand, I'm a unique expression of all that is, and I lead with that uniqueness. I lead with that leadership. On the other hand, I live in a larger evolutionary context, right, in which I'm aware of this larger context and of my role in it. That's the place where the two things come together. I'm actually a unique expression of the evolutionary process. I'm the personal face of essence. I'm the personal face of evolution. And in the sense that I'm part of a larger process, I'm serving. In the sense that I'm a unique expression of that larger process, I'm leading. And so leadership, right, and followership, discipleship, merge into one. The larger context, I'm following. I'm part of that larger context. I bow to it. Unique self, my unique expression of the personal face of evolution as it lives in me, as me, and through me, that's my leadership. There it is.
I feel totally inspired. Is there anything else? What else? What's the sort of final idea that you would invite listeners to take away and from this conversation and really contemplate?
For themselves,
people that are interested in leadership and people that are interested in integral and these consciousness movements that are starting to really emerge, what would you have people go away with?
You know, one of the things that I would say is I would just point to an example for this moment, right? And the example that I would point to, you know, would be you in this moment, my good friend, right? Here we've got Brett Thomas, you know, businessman, entrepreneur in Dallas, Texas, you know, who took an enormous amount of time, right, to convene this Integral Leadership Conference, right? And that's an initiative of leadership. Here we are, right? People from 82 countries, right, are gathering and convening to hear these keynotes and to be inspired and to create the virtue of virtual community, and new connections will be made and new openings will happen, right, and new heartstrings will be pulled and hopefully new ethics will be born and new meetings will happen, right? So it's precisely that kind of leadership I would point to. Right? It's not how can I save the world. It's how can I take a step now in my community, right, in my context, right, in my circle, right, to address a particular need that for some reason – and I am the person who can address. It's mine to address. It's mine to do. And it's mine to incarnate. It's my unique gift. It was exactly what you're doing in this fantastic, right, initiative. And everyone has that place, perhaps not on this level. Perhaps you won't have 82 countries participating. But everyone has the ability to actually participate, right, in a particular unique way, to give their unique gift, to shift something in the source code of where you're living in the world. And from a non-dual perspective, when I actually realize that all is part of the all, the wholeness of the all, the interconnectivity of the all and the all, anything you do shifts, ripples, changes everything. So step up, figure out what it is, right, and don't just hold the vision, implement it. Better to implement something small than just merely vision something large. Take a first step, make something real, manifest it, incarnate it, right, and that is the great delight and the great invitation of your life, and we need you to do it. We need you to do it because there's something you, right, and as you particular person listening right now gorgeously in his or her living room, there's something that you can do, right, that no one else can do. There's a way that you can step up that no one else can step up. There's a way that you can laugh, live, love, be. There's a poem you can write. There's a song you can sing, right, that no one else, right, can write, sing, or be, or become. So really what this is all about is, leadership is about, we need you. We need you to be a leader. We need you to be a leader holding the larger context, right? We need your gift, you know, so let it be so.
That is a beautiful invocation, in a sense.
Amen. Amen, Holy Brother Brett. It's delightful, delightful to be with you. So it's
always, Mark.
Proud of you.
Such an inspiration. And I'm so grateful to that you're a part of this and the incredible support from the Center for World Spirituality that y'all have provided to help make this event possible. There's about 20 really hardworking people, almost all volunteers, by the way, from half a dozen different countries, just kind of using the internet and you know, just working together to pull this event together. And I just really appreciate your support, and I'm so looking forward to your keynote coming up at the conference. And until the next time we talk, God bless you, Mark. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Brett. Tons of love. Thank you.